Welcome to the Cine Bros Podcast. I hope you enjoyed the first round of our debate episodes, but for this episode, we have another tangent episode for you where we have a guest on. We welcome Dylan Arrington to the show. Dylan, say hello.
How's it going, fellas? Sorry, Jack Nicholson. Hello, everyone.
For eagle-eyed observers, you might have known that in the description of our episodes, it says music by Dylan Arrington. This is the person who made the intro and outro to our show. And you know, Dylan, I tell Luke all the time, I think you're the most talented musician I actually know in person.
Wow, that's quite a big compliment. Thanks. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with that. I mean, because I've known Hunter a really long time, so you two are definitely two of the most talented I know for sure.
I appreciate it. I'm going to tell him that.
But Dylan, you want to tell us a little about who you are and why you're on the show today?
Yeah. So I've known all of these guys for a while. I worked at the movie theater with them around my senior year of high school. I started becoming obsessed with film and loving every aspect of it, really getting into the nitty gritty of how to make films and stuff like that. I went to a film camp my parents sent me to in Orlando, Florida. It was actually at Disney World that was put on by the New York Film Academy because they wanted to see if I actually wanted to pursue that as a career. I had no prior knowledge of working on any type of film other than, you know, I just really liked movies. So I ended up going to that, and it was a great experience. I loved it and started visiting all different kinds of art schools and film schools around the country. And I actually went to Cornish College of the Arts in Seattle, Washington for roughly a semester and came home to study film and art and all that. So
now, I don't know much about that school. Is that a fairly good filmmaking school in Seattle?
I mean, from what I looked at for the state, I mean, yeah, it was. Out of all the film schools that I visited, it was definitely the most adept out of all the ones. I really liked the professor that was the film teacher. He seemed to really know what he was talking about, and his ideologies with film really lined up with mine. I wanted to do more like indie type films rather than large blockbuster type movies. Actually, notable alumni, the actor Brendan Fraser went there. I don't know if you guys know who that is.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, he went there. It was a fun experience, but I ended up leaving.
If you don't mind me asking, Dylan, why'd you end up leaving?
That's a good question. Yeah, I loved it when I first got there. And so basically the way the school program was working essentially was it was divided up into modules the first year. So I was doing basically fine art, and film was like the last module of the second semester in spring. So I'm not a very artistic person in the sense of painting or drawing or doing anything like that. I'm more like, you know, musical and film related writing, stuff like that. So the modules and stuff I was doing were mainly geared towards like drawing and stuff like that. And I you know, I'm just really bad at that. So yeah, I was often felt like I was mocked for that. And that I don't think I really stood out to my professors as someone who excelled, really. So mainly a combination of that, and I was reading a quote from Quentin Tarantino that said that he never went to film school and he went to films, is what he said. That if you love movies enough and you love the story enough, you will find out a way to tell it and portray it. So, and that really stuck with me. A lot of directors I like, you know, didn't go to film school. So that, I think that was probably the main push for me to get out of it and come back home.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a ton of directors that don't go to film school. The way I look at it, as you know, I'm minoring in film studies. So the way I look at it is like, if you go to school for film, you're going to like learn about the history of film and like the history of directing and the history of developing these techniques. And you may have some classes there that's like production classes, but I feel like most film programs in schools, like apart from like the prestigious universities like New York or like one of those, is
exactly
you're learning history, not production. Like I think the best way to enter production is just to do it and just perfect your own craft.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, definitely. One of the schools I visited, I think you'll get a kick out of this. Very, very odd. It was I went to visit the University of North Carolina, but their film branch, I think it was University of North Carolina. I'm not sure, but it was separate from the main campus of the school. It was in Winston-Salem. So, really cool city. I'd never been there before. So I went there and visited, and basically the way their program is set set up there is the committee decides what your major is going to be based on your work. You have no say in what you want to do. Whoa, as your major.
I don't. Yeah. I wouldn't like that, but that's okay. Me though. Mm. But.
Okay,
that's weird.
But that's kind of cool to me because I assume these people are like actual professionals, right?
And they said they were. They didn't really back that up. So I don't know. I did meet one of the professors there. So they were actually filming a student film there. They had their own like soundstage type thing, and they built their own set, and the set looked incredible. It was the first time I'd ever been on something like that, and it really, I mean, the craftsmanship, it looked like a real set, like a real bedroom. And I ended up talking to that professor after they got done shooting, and I mean, he just kind of seemed, you know, really scatterbrained. And the thing they kept like promoting in the school was like, we can get you internships to big places. So I was with another guy there, and the guy asked the professor, he's like, so what type of internships can you offer? And he's like, well, yeah, you know, we could probably get you an internship at Adult Swim, and that's probably it. And I was like, yeah, I was like, what? You know, okay, totally different than what I expected.
But like, to be fair though, like an internship at Adult Swim is more than most film schools would get you.
And true,
yeah.
Like Adult Swim it's a pretty prestigious program.
Okay, I would be pumped about an internship at Adult Swim.
Yeah.
I mean, like, if I was wanting to do that, I would have loved that. Yeah, that would have been awesome to me. But I wanted to work more on like just independent, like actual filmmaking rather than that. But yeah, I mean, that is a great opportunity if you do.
It could have been like a good like start.
That. Yeah, to get your name out there. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was totally blinded when they said big names. I was thinking like totally Hollywood, like big name stuff, like I don't know, 20th Century Fox or something like that. You know, even if it's just like getting coffee for someone or getting paperwork, you know, that stuff like that is what I had in mind. But I was a little bit let down by that. But you know, I guess it's whatever you like, essentially. But yeah.
Now you're a professor in Seattle. You mentioned you liked his ideology on film and that it kind of mirrored yours. What was his ideology?
It seemed very indie based and almost like experimental type. I really enjoy making that type of film and watching that type of film. It was very close knit. It seemed like the classes were very small and you almost developed like a personal connection with the professor, which I've gone to a small school all my life, so I'm kind of used to that, and you kind of don't get lost in a sea of people. The professors and everyone know your name there, and that was really appealing to me. But I remember when I visited there, and everyone was listing off their favorite movies, and I listed off just a few of mine, and he said that he really enjoyed mine. He didn't say that to really anyone else, so I feel like he and I saw eye to eye on a lot of things, which was unique based on all the other schools I went to.
Yeah, that's so. Had he made like films of his own?
I think so. I'm not sure because from where like that school was really weird with the modules, and I never actually had a film class there. I ended up just learning stuff from my friends and other people. But I would say, yeah. I mean, yeah. I don't. I'm not sure. I didn't ask him then. They were watching a film that someone had made in Seattle. It was like an experimental, weird movie. They were kind of just showing and he was talking about it, but I didn't ask him. I assume that he's worked before. He seemed to know what he was talking about.
Yeah, so you say you didn't really take any film classes. Like, what kind of classes did you take there?
So like the way the school year was, it was divided into like three modules per semester. So the first semester I had was called like Sight. The second one was Comp Decomp, and the third was, I can't remember the third one. It was like, it had something to do with like calligraphy or something like that. And all the cool stuff was the second semester. So it was like photography, film, and I can't remember the other one. But all my film knowledge that I've obtained has been through that film camp I went to. That was extremely beneficial because I actually worked with cameras and I worked with editing software, worked with people who worked in the field. But yeah, to me, you know, I really hated that about that art school, that you had to do the other art mediums, because I had no interest in doing those. I just wanted to get straight into film. But I still did work on film. A lot of my projects were film-centered. They allowed me to do that, but yeah.
That film camp sounds really, really interesting, because I've never really heard of like a film camp. I mean, I've heard of like space camp and band camp and all kinds of other camps, but a film camp sounds pretty neat.
So what did that camp do for you? Like what all did you do at that camp?
So as soon as I got there, they had an acting division and they had the directing division. So I was in the directing division because I had no interest in doing acting. So we were divided into groups of four, and you had the opportunity to make two short films within the 3-week time period. So when you were divided into four groups, you would all switch positions. So like there would be the grip, the assistant director, there'd be the director of photography, and then there would be the director. And I think there was probably five groups of four. And I didn't, like I said, I didn't know anything about the production of film or where you start. So I started at the bottom as the grip. I volunteered to go as the grip and slowly worked my way up and learned from other people's mistakes along the way. And I think it was very beneficial for me to do it that way rather than just jumping straight in, because I had no clue what I was doing.
Yeah, so, you know, I've taken several production classes as part of my program at school. And we kind of work the same way, where you will have like a ton of different film roles. Like you have your director, your producer, the editor, the sound guy, lighting, and then you'll like rotate out as you do certain projects. And I'm going to ask you, because this has happened to me, did you go in thinking that you wanted, like, that you would prefer a certain role, but then you actually got into all of them and you found that you really liked another role?
Not really, because I knew that I wanted to do directing, and I really did not like doing the other jobs on set. And I really think it boils down to the people that I was with. I've never been around so many like pretentious people in my life. So the people that I was in a group with were all just like really weird people. I don't really know how to describe it. I mean, there's a lot of weird stories that happen on set with some of the other people. But I just kept thinking to myself, like, I just got to hang out there so I can be the director. But if I was in a different group, probably. Yeah.
Okay. See, because for me, like, you know, I think everybody goes into film projects wanting to direct. Those are the people that we know, like your Tarantinos, your Nolans, people like that. Those are the people that are advertised. But for me, like, I really found that I was best at and I felt most comfortable with editing. That was like the job that I felt that I kind of fell into. And this is going to sound pretty bad, but I'm sure you can relate to this.
Okay.
I always chose editing in my group projects because I felt editing gave me the most control over the final product. And, you know, when you're with college students trying to learn film, it's probably going to be a comedy of errors. And I felt that editing gave me the most control of, like, fixing it. And I feel like it did.
Oh, so certainly. Yeah. Really, the power of film really relies on the editor. If you don't have, you know, a solid editor, you're going to have a really sloppy film. I mean, I think Star Wars, the first Star Wars, is a great example. That movie was a mess, but wasn't it George Lucas's wife who
Yes.
really fixed it and made it awesome, but just due to editing. So, I mean, editing is a really important part, and I really think they're the most underpaid people in the production business.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. And, you know, I also really enjoyed like the cinematography part, like actually working with the camera. But again, I felt that editing gave, like, because if you're like the cameraman and you give it off to a bad editor, you're probably not going to be able to get the best out of the shots that you do.
Right. Oh, definitely. Yeah, for sure.
It's kind of funny that because I've never really, and I guess just because I, you know, don't know as much about editing and things like that, but I guess I never really realized how important editors were. And there's no, like, and you're talking about them being underpaid, and there's no, like, superstar editor that, like, at least that I could know by name. Like, there's all kinds of, like, superstar directors like Scorsese and Spielberg and all the guys, and then writers like Aaron Sorkin, but there's no, like, big editor or anything. So that's kind of,
I think
it's kind of neat.
That,
yeah.
Peter Jackson actually did work editing the Lord of the Rings movies as long as, like, as well as directing it.
I think
he could
fact
check me on that, but I think he did.
Okay, I didn't realize that. That's okay. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you're right.
That was something that I learned was, like, really a big, like, no-no or whatever in filming is the director is not supposed to interfere with the editing process. But, you know, some movies that I really like Apocalypse Now, which I'm going to talk about, Coppola, who directed that, he edited the whole movie. And I really think that because that movie was so personal to him and the story, the way he wanted to tell it and everything, I couldn't imagine anyone else editing that except for him. But
yeah, I agree that if it's like the directors or writers, like, it's their movie I think that they always should be the editor of it. That's yeah. like the only way to get it done the way you want it done. You hire someone else to do it.
Yeah, see,
screw the whole thing up.
And you know, Dylan, this is another thing with me. I feel like you might be able to relate to this because of the types of movies that you make. But I find it very hard to cede control to other people when I think I have a really good idea. Like, I go in with a very set vision. I want everything done the way I envision it. And it's hard for me to just let other people try to execute my vision, which is why I much prefer like short films or like, you know, like 5 to 10 minute little projects like that, because I can, you know, shoot it, write it, edit it, whatever, myself. And it comes out exactly how I want.
Oh, for sure. Exactly. Yeah. When I worked on those two short films that I made at that film camp, I learned that from just working as the you know, like the person that just stood off to the side, you know, as like the, they would just get everything for people. I can't remember what that's called. It just slipped my DA? Mind. Yeah. Yeah. I just would walk around and, you know, I would make sure everything was right and I would carry stuff. And that's really all I did. But yeah, I learned from other people's mistakes. Whenever someone was directing, they were not assertive and they were not very clear on what their vision was. So in return, all those movies that I worked on that I wasn't directing, I thought were terrible. They were not cohesive. They, you know, did not direct their actors very well. And I learned that going through. So when it was my turn to direct, I was extremely assertive. Not in like a mean way. I'm not like, you know, I wasn't like Kubrick in The Shining. I wasn't like yelling at my actors or like smacking them or whatever. But like, you know, I had a very clear vision and I tried to convey that as best as I could to everyone working on the film. And everyone really saw what I was trying to do and helped. So,
okay.
Yeah, Dylan, if you could you talk just for a second about like the relationship between a director and an actor? Because I know how important that is when making a movie. And I've always been, because like you and Tyler talked about being more interested in like the filmmaking aspect, because I've always wanted to kind of try to get into acting. I haven't really done much, but I'd always kind of like to do that. And I guess I've never really thought before I started getting into film so much that how important the relationship between the actor and the director is for the finished product of the movie. So maybe like the relationship that you've had with your actors and movies that you've directed or something.
Yeah, man. Yeah, that's definitely a great question. Let's see, when I was doing my second film, which I thought was this was my first. I apologize. This was my first film. I had told people beforehand, like actors and stuff, about my story, and a lot of people wanted to do it. There was this girl that I was kind of friends with there, and she really wanted to be the leading actress in it. But they had no say in it. It was the committee there decided who would go to whose project, which actors would go to whose project. So I ended up getting someone else that I didn't really know very well from the film camp, but she and I actually hit it off pretty well. Like when I was telling her, explaining the story to her, she had read it before, the night before. But yeah, I think developing just a friendly and almost like personal type connection with your actor is extremely beneficial. It makes them feel, because I noticed that when we first started, she seemed really nervous and anxious about my story, and I really tried to get to know her more before and make her feel more at ease and more comfortable with me behind the camera. And it's definitely an extremely beneficial thing when actors and directors get along. Like Robert De Niro and Scorsese, I think, are probably the most popular when it comes to that. But yeah, definitely, I think that's key.
Would you all mind if I told a short little story real quick that kind of tells the opposite of what Dylan just said?
Sure, yeah, go ahead.
So in my it was sophomore year of college, I had a class that was basically like an intro to editing. And we were in groups of like 3 to 5 people. And for our final project, we each had to like write and shoot our own project. And it was super short. It was only supposed to be like, I think like 2 to 4 minutes. So it's a very short film. So I chose something very simple. I chose, like, I had my characters playing cards and then one of them just getting mad and storming out. And the concept was I was just playing around with like a ton of different angles and all that kind of stuff. And that was my project. Just kind of a show of technical ability. Well, there was another guy in my group who, for some reason that astounds me to this day, he decided that he wanted to recreate the Ezekiel scene from Pulp Fiction.
Oh my.
With
what?
With college actor who had never acted before, can I just say. And he was directing. And it was an unmitigated disaster.
I'm sure, yeah.
It was the worst project I've ever been a part of. He had no idea what he was doing. He was so... It was almost like he was trying to act like Tarantino would. He was ordering people around and all of this stuff without exactly explaining what he wanted them to do. He was just like, stand here, we'll do the scene. Then he records and he was like, cut, 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 it was all wrong. And then he'd give you some sort of other absurd instruction. I was the cinematographer for that shoot, so I just took the camera and did exactly where he told me to shoot it. But the actors on that, they hated him. They are complaining about it the entire time.
Well, I would too, because I mean, I understand that, like, you know, they're obviously, they need to tell you, they need to instruct you, obviously, but like, if he's just bossing you around and crap, it's like, dude, we're both in college right now.
And I think the funniest part to me, like the absolute funniest part, was when it actually came to, like, you know, the part where like Samuel L. Jackson is reciting Ezekiel.
Right.
The actor who was supposedly playing Samuel L. Jackson, who, by the way, was as white as you could possibly be. he had to recite the lines from his phone.
No.
And that was the take that the director used. I kid you not.
Oh my gosh. Jeez.
But yeah, that's a story from my college project experience.
Well, did you get a good grade on it at least? Or
We were all graded by our individual projects. I got a 100 on mine. I have no idea what he did.
Well, there you go. Okay, so at least you got a good grade out of the deal.
Yeah, I imagine you probably got a bad grade, because I remember when I was in art school, and even like at the film camp, they made it very clear to not copy other people's work because of like the copyright thing. Because they were working under the New York Film Academy, and I was at Cornish, and they made it very clear to not, you know, get all kinds of legal trouble from that. So I imagine he probably got a horrible grade on that for copying it verbatim from Pulp Fiction.
And can I just add that he was the only person in like the 40 person class to copy someone else's scene?
Oh my god! Yeah, you always, from my experience, there's always one who does that. There's always one who does that, man.
Regardless of my personal feelings towards him, Quentin Tarantino is one of the finest directors working today. So the hubris of thinking you can copy his work as a like freshman college student is hilarious.
Right. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
He's my favorite director, which I mean, I've said that on this show before. But yeah, I mean, a student in college, there's no way he's going to be able to replicate that.
Yeah. Yeah. So Dylan, you have directed several short films. I believe you're describing Vitriol, right? That you made at the camp.
Wait, pardon, what is it?
I said I believe you're describing your film Vitriol as the one you made at the camp, right?
Yeah, it's called Eve Point 2, yeah. That was the first one, the black and white one, yeah.
Yeah. So can you give me a little bit of background info on that one? Because I did think it was pretty cool. It was very reminiscent of like a Salvador Dali type film, like experimental.
Yeah, for sure, yeah. The way that the camp was like set up was you were supposed to, I guess, come with stories that you wanted to make. And I didn't know that. One of the guys in my group, I remember, he was so annoying. And I remember right when I got there, he told me that. He's like, so did you write any stories for what we're going to film? And I was like, no, I didn't know we were supposed to do that. And he was like telling me all these stories. And I remember the one that he wanted to film was exactly like Groundhog Day.
Oh, my.
And
there's always one.
Like, yeah. And I told him, I was like, dude, that's exactly Groundhog Day. He's like, well, no, there's some minor differences. I was like, dude, shut up, man. Yeah. So, you know, when I made that film, Eve Point 2, I made it basically the day before it was due to shooting. I was sitting in my room and I was listening to the 2001 soundtrack, because I used that song in the movie, a somber choir. I used it. I just kept listening to that. And that's usually when I start writing something film related or something that I want to film, I'm always listening to music. Music invokes something in my imagination that I can't even really describe. Like, I just begin seeing things in my mind and I want to see a physical manifestation of that. So when I was making that film, it touches on themes of self-identity, alternate dimensions. I really think David Lynch was probably my biggest inspiration for that. He's one of my absolute favorite directors. Eraserhead was really a giant inspiration on that, for the black and white and the camera movements. I even try to do reminiscent Kubrick shots in it with the one point perspective, which I'll talk about that later. But yeah, I really just wanted to make a statement, I guess, about nothingness, I guess, and dreams. It's told in a very dreamlike type way. And I guess that's the best way I can really describe it. I know that doesn't sound very good, but that was the whole experience was me telling in this dreamlike fashion of nothingness, and also incorporating, you know, biblical references with the apple and the girl in it being Eve, like the story of Adam and Eve eating the apple and everything.
Yeah, and for our listeners who would like to watch the film that we are discussing, I will leave a link to it in the description of the podcast and on YouTube. So the apple represented biblical, like the Adam and Eve story?
Yes, yeah. I'm raised Catholic. I'm still a Catholic. I find that a lot of religious imagery and religious story, religious text is incredibly interesting. And I love the way the stories are told and how you can take other themes and or other genres and mix them.
Yeah, I agree with that. Because that was my next question, what the apple represented. Now, are you one of those people that would rather leave the audience to, like, try to figure out your ambiguity? Or would you, do you have a problem with explaining?
When I made that, yeah, I was like, you know, it's up to whatever. But now looking back on it, yeah, you know, I have a way that I want to tell it. But I always think it's really interesting when I show people the stuff I've done and what they think of it. And I guess, like, the magic of movies, I really like that. I don't really think about it one way or the other.
Yeah. And your other one that you linked, The Loudest Silence.
Mm-hmm.
There are some pretty cool looking effects in that. How did you accomplish that? Like with the distortion of like the camera and the characters and all that.
Yeah. So I the guy that was in that movie, he was probably my best friend at that camp. His name's Nico Arcuri is his name. And he's still trying to do acting. I think he lives in Louisiana. And I remember when I was making that film, I had to have him do that. He and I saw eye to eye with everything. That was probably the best director actor relationship that I've ever had. Filming something was with him. So the way I got those types of effects was actually editing. I was using Avid, I think, was the software. Yeah, and I was messing with the saturation and the color hue of each shot, because the song that I chose, The Less I Know the Better by Tame Impala, when I listened to that song, that originally wasn't going to be the song I was going to use, but that song is just so vibrant to me, and I feel like I see so many different colors listening to that song, so and I really wanted to represent that in that short.
Yeah, you did a good job.
Thank you. I guess as per usual on this podcast, they always ended with a story. So they allowed me to tell a story this week. So I have a really awkward and interesting story in the same vein of some of the other ones they've told. So this takes place this is when I was in Seattle at art school. So every module rotation, you'd be in there for about 3 weeks or so. And at the end of the module, you would have like a big project. Do you have anything? Did you do something similar to that in your film studies classes, Tyler, where you had to do like a big project at the end of the semester?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. So did they do critiques at them at the end too with the class?
Yes.
Okay. Well, this is where I'm headed with that. So you get it. You understand. Okay. So.
I understand how this thing works. Yes.
Yes. Okay. So the module that we did, it was the very first one I did when I was there. So it was, you know, September or so. And the module is called Sight. It's like SIGHT/SITE. And it's the most vague concept I've ever heard in art. I certainly thought it was the hardest one out of all the modules there. And the professors were really pretentious and kind of pompous about it. Like they were, you know, they knew so much about it. Like, of course, we're not going to know anything. We're students. So they kind of like did like a lot of one-upping. I didn't understand it. It has something to do with like dignifying space or something like that. And to preface how, you know, weird people were in my class, I talked about this with Tyler a little bit before we started. So the first little project we had, we had to use blue tape or something to dignify space. And it made no sense. I, and I totally like winged my project on that. I had no idea what I was doing, but I tried to like sell it at the end during critiques. So during the critiques, for those listening, I would talk about my project for 2 minutes, and then the students would critique it, and then the professors would critique it, and everyone was surrounding your project. And I remember I was like, you know, winging it, and for the most part, I think people were believing it. One of the guys that was my friends like totally liked it, and he really spoke up for me on my half and made it look good. But there's this one girl who had like the girl from Pulp Fiction's haircut, but it was purple and like a denim jacket with Green Day pins all over it and stuff like that. And she said to me in front of everyone, she's like, yeah, I don't know if you're just like uncreative, but I really don't see what you're doing here. And I was like, are you serious? You allow this talk here in front of everyone? Oh, man, that made me so mad. I despised her the rest of the time. And then, you know, the professors, you know, of course, didn't really like my project. But that's not even the main story of what I'm going to tell. I'm just trying to set the tone here. Okay. So the final project in that module, we had to dignify space or clarify space or whatever. And you could use whatever medium you wanted to. So a lot of people chose photography and film. I chose film. Some people did drawings. There was this one girl that did a lot of really cool photography shots. They were almost like horror. They reminded me a lot of like the video game Silent Hill. They were really cool, and she and I talked afterwards. Anyway, so I did a film, and for the most part, most time I was in art school, you know, I was drawing and doing stuff that I wasn't, you know, ever really good at. And I always thought that people kind of assumed me as dull or something like that, that I wasn't, you know, very articulate. And then I made that film, which was my, you know, my forte or whatever. And everyone was like really kind of confused by it. They didn't really understand. But anyway, that one of the last projects that we looked at, mind you, the person has to describe their project in 2 minutes. And then with the students looking at it and the professors, the students chime in next, and then the professors do. So I was in the back and I couldn't really see. Everyone was gathered up on this girl's project, and this girl was super out there, like just weird. I don't know. She's someone who just did not have her bearings straight, I guess. Just like really spiritual, I would guess. She always said she was very spiritual. So mind you, the project is dignifying space, and she had 3 pictures up on the wall, all of herself naked.
Oh, okay.
And dude, I've never been in a more awkward situation. I mean, it was literally something out of like Curb Your Enthusiasm or something. Like I was like looking around like, what's going on here? Like, how is that clear dignifying space or anything? These are just 3 like naked pictures of yourself. And you're showing it to not only the students, but to your professors. You're showing your body to your professors. Dude, it's so awkward.
All right. Dylan, I have to know. Were these like tasteful artistic nudes, or were they just nudes?
She was like hanging from a tree or something like that. I mean, it didn't really look artistic to me, and it made no sense with the project at all. It had nothing to do with the project. This is just like, I don't know if that's like a fantasy she had of just like wanting to show herself like that to her professors and other classmates. But yeah, I mean, what were you gonna say, Ray?
I was just gonna say, like, how could somebody be comfortable showing their professors that?
No, yeah, dude. I was trying not to laugh too during it. I had to kind of just like put my head down and look away for a second, and I was really just questioning, I guess, reality at that point. I was like,
I would have thought I was getting punked or something, man.
Yeah. Because everyone had like, you know, they were taking videos of the city or like the countryside or something like that, the ocean. And you know, it's just normal stuff. That's kind of, and I did something similar to that. And then it just comes to this girl who is naked. I couldn't really hear her, what she was saying to trying to defend it. But I mean, it just sounded like a bunch of bull crap. Like she was basically what I was doing. She was winging it basically. And, no one really seemed to have a problem with it, which was really shocking to me. I was like this, you know, I was trying to imagine like if I did something like that, like that would be weird. And I would probably be expelled for that. If I did that, if I was like, okay guys, here's my project. Here's me naked. Here's 3 pictures of me naked. You know, I would get expelled for that. And it's so man, it was so it was so weird absolutely bizarre.
Dylan, I think the fact that you were the only one who was like confused and appalled by it makes it like doubly as funny.
I mean, like I felt like Larry David in Curb Your Enthusiasm. If you ever watched that show, like I was like, well, you know, what's going on? Like, no one's going to say anything about this. You know, and the thing was too, they were hung in the halls of the school, so anyone in the school could have seen it. The dean, other teachers, other students, someone just walking through the school, they could have just seen. Oh, you know, and it had her name under it and said student, and there's three pictures of her naked just for anyone to see. So,
Dylan, okay, you know what you should have done?
What?
You should have went up to her and went like, I don't know if you're just uncreative or...
Yeah, exactly.
And then just did the same thing that she did to you.
Yeah, man. Oh, man, the audacity that some of those people had, like, there was just no... I don't know. Not everyone in that school, you know, I had a lot of really good friends there at that school, but, you know, that thought rationally about, you know, their work and what they were doing in their daily lives. But I really think that person just lacked the critical thinking and just rational thinking in their brain. They didn't have it. It's gone.
What are the odds she's listening right now?
Oh, I wanted a million probably. Yeah. I don't follow her on anything.
You're going to advertise this on all your social media platforms, right?
Yeah.
So you need to do is follow this girl and then post it.
I would. I don't think she has social media, though. For some reason, I feel like I remember her saying that she didn't have it. I just like another like little side note on it. One time, my friends and I got drunk really night. It was like a Sunday night before, you know, class on Monday. And I was really hungover in the morning. Class was at like 8 in the morning. So I was going on the elevator about 7 to eat breakfast. And I guess I was in a group with one of her friends, a project where we both had to work on something. And I never went that weekend to work on it because I was recording with my band that I was in there. And so I'm like really, I have a splitting headache in the morning. It's 7 in the morning. And I see her down there. She's about to get on and she's like, my friend missed you when you were supposed to work on the project this weekend. Where were you? And I was like, yeah, well, I was recording. And I was like, I have a really bad headache right now. You know, I'm not feeling the best right now. She's like, oh, well, she's going to kill you later today. And I'm like, what? You know, I'm still like trying to keep reality straight here. I have a splitting headache. And then she just starts laughing and gets on the elevator and goes up. I mean, oh, part of me was like, you know, I don't even think that person was real, that they were just like, I just imagined them, you know. But yeah. She was just something else, man.
And that, kids, is why Dylan dropped out of art school.
That's part of it, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
All right, do you have anything else, Dylan?
No, I think I've shared everything that I wanted to say, so I appreciate you guys having me on here. It was really fun, and I like what you guys are doing with this podcast, and I'm going to keep supporting it, so.
Well, very glad to hear that, Dylan. Glad to have you on the pod as well.
All right, and
when Tyler told me we were having you on as a guest, I was really excited.
Yeah, because I remember we had that class together. I never really worked with you at the movie theater, but yeah.
Yeah, we never met at the movies, but.
Yeah, but yeah, if you guys need anything with help with the podcast or music or whatever, I'm always down. I'm taking the whole setup with me to college to do. I'm doing like a music analysis type thing on YouTube right now. So yeah, you guys need help with anything, I'm totally down.
And with that, we're going to bring this episode of the Cine Bros Podcast to a close. If you like the episode, you can follow us on all of our social media platforms at Cine Bros P on Twitter, Cine Bros Podcast on Facebook and Instagram. And if you are on Reddit, we have our own subreddit at r/CineBrosPodcast where we post episode discussion threads. Ray, anything else to say?
Thanks for the support. Comment anything you'd like us to watch or talk about. And that does it.
Thanks for listening.